Energy independence and creating a new economy of green-collar jobs have been major themes during the Democratic convention in Denver this week. Well, termite guts, of all things, could be factors in helping achieve both those goals. Some scientists believe that understanding termites' innards could lead to developing a new kind of biofuel and even solve global warming. With me now for today's underreported segment is Dr. Phil Hugenholtz, head of the Joint Genome Institute's Microbial Ecology Program, which is working on mapping the contents of the termites' guts. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
I've always wondered if there was a positive side to termites. How long have scientists understood that their guts might be of value?
Well, people have been looking at termites for about 150 years, but in terms of energy potential, there was a bit of a look at it in the 70s when there was that energy crisis. But in the last few years, again with the problem with gasoline prices, it's become prominent again.
And why during times when we have energy crises?
Because termites are very good at breaking down wood into sugar. And once you have sugar, you can make all sorts of biofuels from it. So if we can learn from nature how to break down wood or other polymers, like plant cell walls, into sugar, then you can start to generate some cheap biofuels.
So a termite eats the wood and the end product is sugar?
Actually, that's an intermediate product. So the organism takes the sugar and converts that to hydrogen and CO2, and then that's made into acetate, which is a fatty acid, and that's the payoff for the termite. And then the termite uses the acetate and finally produces CO2. So what you actually get coming out of a termite mainly is CO2 and methane, and of course poop, termite poop, which is just partially digested wood fiber.
So they're producing water.
They're producing water, yeah. There's some water in there, yes.
But what we would want from this is the hydrogen. Do they break the water down into oxygen and hydrogen?
Hydrogen is an intermediate in the digestive process, and so that's coming from the sugar fermentation, and that's immediately consumed to make either acetate or methane.
Now, why would this even matter much? Do termites do this efficiently? Is that why we are looking into what they do?
Yeah, they do it. They do it very efficiently. They've learned how to harness microorganisms to break down the sugar polymers in the plant cell wall. So that's the real bottleneck, is being able to take the plant cell walls and break down, which essentially is three parts sugar, but it's in long chains. And the trick is to be able to break those chains down into sugar. And so termites have learned how to do that. And once you have the sugar, it's very easy to convert it into whatever you want by fermentation.
And we would expend a lot more energy if we had to do it through some kind of invented machinery?
Yeah, so you can do it chemically. It takes a lot of energy. So the name of the game with biofuels is to try and get more energy out than you put in. And so termites do this with enzymes, and they do it with an alkaline pretreatment as well.
And it would be a lot more expensive to produce hydrogen just taking it from the atmosphere?
Yeah.
I've read about higher termites versus lower termites. Can you explain what that is?
The main difference is that the lower termites have bacteria and protozoa, that's microbial eukaryotes, whereas the higher termites only have the bacteria. So along the evolutionary path, they ditch their protozoan.
Does it matter which kind of termite you study?
For us, yeah, there's a practical reason that we turn to the higher termites, because we're sequencing the DNA directly from the termite hindgut, and what we're trying to do is discover enzymes. That's the main industrial objective anyway. And so your average microorganism has a very small genome, about 3 million bases, and your average protozoan has a much larger genome. So some of them are in the range or even bigger than the human genome, which is 3 billion bases. And you also have a lot fewer genes that are on that DNA. So you get a much higher bang for your buck for sequencing if you go after bacteria than if you go after protozoa.
Well, aren't there different kinds of termites within a colony, workers, soldiers, queens?
Yeah.
Are they all okay?
No, we focus on the workers. because as the name suggests, they're doing most of the work, most of the digestion. In fact, the workers often feed the soldiers, so they don't have their digestive tract's not nearly as developed.
So we're talking about the same kinds of termites that lead people to call an exterminator when they see them in their homes.
Well, those ones are mainly lower termites. So actually, I got a bunch of those lower termites from my backyard. They were inhabiting my fence, and so I grabbed that bit of fence I pulled down and I stuck it in a Tupperware container and so I could keep it inside. And so we have done a little bit on that, just looking at enzyme activity and what have you. But for the sequencing part, we're looking at the higher termites, and you get those, and they hang out in the tropics. So places like Costa Rica, you can get them in southern parts of the U.S., like in southern Arizona or Texas. But where I'm living in Northern California, you don't get the higher termites, you just get the lower ones.
Yeah, you live outside of San Francisco.
Yeah.
But why are they in those other areas? I guess they're more tropical areas. A different kind of wood?
No, actually, I don't know the reason why you get the higher termites localized in the tropics.
I understand that you're also particularly interested in only one of three guts, the third gut of the termite. Termites actually have three guts?
They actually have five hind gut segments. And we look at the third one because that's the biggest one, and that's where most of the microorganisms are hanging out. And so we focused on that first because we thought we would get the most information back there. That must be where most of the biological activity is occurring.
So can you walk us through the process by which a termite will digest wood? How long does it take?
The wood usually passes through in about a day, 1 to 2 days.
Would it go through all the guts?
Yeah, from the top to the bottom, yeah.
But the third gut is the one that's the most important here. You say it has all sorts of microbes that rarely work efficiently.
Well, that's where most of the microorganisms are. So most of the biological activities occur in there. There are other microorganisms further upstream and downstream, but they're in much lower numbers. There's also this really interesting first segment, the P1, the so-called proctodial segment 1, which is alkaline. And so that's thought by many to be an alkaline pretreatment of the plant cell wall material to soften it up and make it easier to digest.
To what degree has the wood already been broken down by the time it reaches the third gut?
Well, that's a topic of great debate. It's certainly, you would expect that chemical pretreatment it breaks down the crystalline structure of those sugar chains and makes it easier for enzymes to get in and break it down.
Is the termite's digestive system the most important part of its anatomy?
Yeah, I guess if it's for the well, you need the legs and what have you to forage, and you definitely need the mouth parts. I shouldn't underestimate the chewing down of the wood fibers to make them more accessible to the microorganisms. So that's really important.
I've read that when a termite queen can no longer reproduce, the other termites in her colony crowd around her and lick her to death. Is that true?
I don't know, but it could be, yes.
I've also heard that if a disease infects a termite colony, the survivors of the disease can vaccinate the colony's young termites using their antennae.
I hadn't heard that one either.
Yeah, well, I guess there are some other people involved in another part of the genome project who can look into that, because that's really interesting, self-vaccination.
Yeah. Well, I mean, entomologist. I'm not an insect guy. I'm a microbiologist. But in the few years that I've been involved in these termite studies, they really are fascinating beasts. Their communication, I mean, they're so simple, but their communication is amazing. Bees do it too, where they vibrate as they pass each other and pass on information.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that they also produce methane. Methane is a problem for global warming, isn't it?
So this
So this has both a positive, and the process is both positive and negative, or is the methane so minuscule that it doesn't really matter that much?
No, actually, I mean, globally, termites are thought to contribute maybe 2 to 4% of the methane to the atmosphere total, and they actually have the methane production turned down. So if you get hydrogen and CO2, you can either make methane or you can make acetate. Now, the insect wants you to make the acetate because that's what it's using. And so it doesn't want you to make methane because it's not getting any energy out of the methane. So, and energetically speaking, it's easier to make methane out of hydrogen and CO2 than acetate. So the insects evolved to ratchet down the methane production. And it's done this in some interesting ways by marginalizing the microbes that produce the methane and put them on the outside so they can't get as direct access to the hydrogen and CO2. So if a termite, for instance, produced the same amount of methane as a cow did, we'd be in big trouble. We'd be producing a lot. There'd be a lot more methane produced from termites. And having searched for termites now on a number of field trips, the number of termites on this planet is just staggering. I was in northern Australia just recently, and as you're driving along the road, there's just hundreds of these termite mounds everywhere, and you break in, and every termite mound, of course, is filled with termites. So I'd hate to think how many termites there are on this planet.
Are these the good termites or the bad termites?
Oh, all termites are good. It's just the human.
No, but I mean the ones that are good for you and your work.
Oh, I see. These ones were actually higher termites. I was in northern Queensland, so it's in the tropics. Yeah, so these are the ones without protozoa. I should also point out that the main reason we started with the higher termites was for logistical reasons with the methods that we use. But these methods are progressing along now, and I think we'll be able to tackle the lower termites as well in the fairly near future.
My guest is Dr. Phil Hugenholtz, head of the Joint Genome Institute's Microbial Ecology Program. We're talking about how termite guts... Is there a more technical term we can use might actually help in creating new energy and fight global warming? Is there a technical term, or should we just keep on saying termite guts?
You could say termite hindgut. That's the part we're looking at, but termite gut's fine.
Your specialty is metagenomics, right?
Yep.
Now, what is that? Is that a new area, a new specialty?
It's pretty new. It's so genomics is sequencing, the Human Genome Project, I think most people would be aware of. So that was a huge deal, sequencing the 3 billion bases that's in the human genome. And this was mainly allowed from technological advancement, that we've just got a lot better at sequencing and making a lot more sequence. And so that was actually finished a few years ahead of time. And when the first microbial genomes were published, was in the mid-90s, even back then, people were thinking, well, you could apply that directly to an environmental sample rather than just to an isolate, because with microorganisms, of course, you have to grow them on a petri dish, right? And so people were thinking about it, but they thought, oh, this could be a disaster, because we really weren't, you couldn't estimate how much you were going to get back from that environmental sample, whether you were just going to get unable to put the pieces together. And so metagenomics is essentially just doing a lot of sequencing of environmental sample. And that the first big studies were published in 2004.
It's been called a very messy science.
Well, it's messy.
What's messy about it?
It's messy compared to genomics. So with the current sequencing technology, what you get back are short pieces of DNA. So, on the order of 500 bases, 500 nucleotides. And so what you end up having is a jigsaw puzzle, right? And so if you have an isolate, a microbial isolate or a human, you've got an endpoint, you've got the one puzzle. If you go and sequence an environmental sample, which contains hundreds of species, then you have a bunch of puzzles all mixed together, and you may not get all the pieces to every puzzle. So it just means it becomes a much harder problem. So if you sequence something that has a really complex microbial community like soil, usually you cannot put those pieces together at all. So you end up just having a whole bunch of short sequences. And you can do some stuff with that, but it's a lot messier than having a completed genome.
If termite research eventually leads to a good biofuel, how do you think the manufacturing of that biofuel might work? Would we be able to produce the elements of the termite's digestive system chemically, or would we need to farm a lot of termites and go to their third guts?
Well, some people think that by the time you've engineered a system to do what a termite does, you'll have a termite. because it is really well evolved to do the job. I mean, it breaks down the wood with its mandibles, and then it delivers that to the microorganisms, which are in a system that is optimal for their functioning. And so to reproduce that in an industrial setting may be very difficult. So essentially what we're mainly doing is enzyme discovery. So we're trying to find enzymes that we may be able to take out of there and clone into another organism to express them. And I always think that if you can partially do what a termite does, it doesn't have to be as efficient. It just has to be efficient enough that you can make biofuel economically.
And this might be a good way of using paper and wood waste, turning garbage into a valuable biofuel. How far along are we right now, and are corporations and governments doing much funding of the research on the termites?
Yeah, it's going crazy at the moment. So lots of government funding, Department of Energy's funding a lot of things. Corporations like BP, which now stands for Beyond Petroleum, sinking a fair bit of cash into it too. So, and there's many, many researchers involved.
Did John McCain and Barack Obama know about this?
Yes, I expect so. I mean, even Bush mentioned it in his one of his States of the Union.
When the idea was first introduced, was it difficult getting people to take studying termite guts seriously?
Well, I mean, the public love termite guts. I don't know why, but I mean, I also look at activated sludge, and nobody ever wants to talk to me about activated sludge. but I think it just captures people's imagination that you might be able to do something with these, essentially what's viewed as a pest.
Well, we've been talking about drilling now without much result, at least for 10 years, if at all. What about with the termite guts? How soon could we actually come up with something that would work?
That's a loaded question that I'm not. I would say that in the same time frame, if nothing's come out of it. I mean, we've got to think broader than the termite gut. The termite gut is one part of it. There's actually many, many parallel studies going on to try and learn from nature how you can break down sugar chains in order to make biofuels. And so we're looking at cow rumen and forest litter and stink birds and all sorts of things like this.
We have to leave it there. Dr. Phil Hoogenholtz, head of the Joint Genome Institute's Microbial Ecology Program. Maybe we can talk about activated sludge sometime in the future. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
On tomorrow's show, Ted Widmer, a former speechwriter for Bill Clinton, analyzes Barack Obama's nomination acceptance speech and puts it in some historical perspective. Also, a look at how fractured America's political landscape really is. Kelly O'Hara on her starring role in the hit revival of South Pacific. And Please Explain is all about landfills. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Sarah English, and Stephen Valentino. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Julia Corcoran, Stephanie Hughes, and Molly Lister. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening.